At Mayo Clinic, we are conquering the unconquerable by leading the way in innovative regenerative medicines to help people with chronic medical conditions. Learn more at mayoclinic.org/possible. Mayo Clinic, you know where to go.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and welcome along to The Home Show. I'm Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, acclaimed Irish crime writer Catherine Ryan Howard gives us a peek into her writer's room, and it's not what you're expecting. The latest on the redevelopment of Moore Street and what's happening to one of Dublin's most iconic trading areas. And show regular Natasha Rocca-Devine on interior trends around the globe. If you'd like to get involved in the show, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com and you'll find me over on socials as Sinead Ryan or versions thereof. What a glorious few days now we've had recently. I'm nearly afraid to say it because it'll probably come to a thundering halt now with hailstones. But if, like me, you've made the most of it by getting stuck into the garden, it's been a fabulous time to put down plants, take the covers off garden furniture and maybe even out eat outdoors. It's just been so nice. And it's just like everything lifts when you do that. And it's just been so wonderful. So long may it last. It may not last. Next week, we are going to have on one of the judges of Super Garden, which is RTE's series on making fabulous gardens for people, certainly to make us green with envy. So I'm really looking forward to that, and hopefully it won't be too late to get a few spring sunshine tips for outdoors. But if you're joining me now, whether you're out walking in the garden or you're still tucked up in bed, stay put, have a cup of coffee. You're very welcome along to The Home Show. Now, as part of our occasional series on writers' rooms, I am delighted today to be joined by acclaimed Irish crime writer Catherine Ryan Howard, whose dark thrillers involving murder and intrigue have many fans, including this one. Catherine joins me now in studio. Catherine, you are very welcome to The Home Show. I'm delighted to have you here. I have your latest book. I am dying to read it, but I'll be honest when I tell you I've read them all. So I'm a big fan. So before we get into this book and where it is, tell us where you write. Now, for the uninitiated, if you don't know Catherine Ryan Howard, and I urge you to go and buy the books, it is a very specific genre. You've a high body count.
Very high, usually, yeah.
Somebody definitely will get murdered.
At least one person.
And somebody else will get the life frightened out of them. So it is a particular genre. So tell me about, does your writing room reflect that?
To be honest, no. So I write in an absolutely gorgeous, extremely girly and very, very pink area. So I have a pink computer, you know, everything is kind of that lovely, what we might call millennial pink or dusty rose. And it could not be more far away from what I'm actually sitting at that desk doing, which is sort of writing about serial killers and thinking about like the darkest parts of the human psyche. But I do love pink.
Like it's nearly Barbiecore.
I think Barbie is a different shade, but it is as much pink. Absolutely. It's like my own little dream house in my corner of my living room.
So it's quite the juxtaposition because, you know, you've won multiple awards for, you know, your descriptions
of... I've lost multiple awards. I have won one single award.
Well, you have these, you know, graphic descriptions of, you know, people being bludgeoned and blood pouring out of them and being strangled at the side of the road.
We're really selling the books here.
Yeah, but like, listen, this is the genre. This is so popular. Crime fiction is so popular in Ireland. You know, there's, it's like, it really is. So, like, how, why is that? So is it that you need that complete change to get your head around it? Is it the change of scene that kind of moves you away from it or gives you an objective?
I think there's like a sort of practical aspect to it, which is that it's in my living room. And I live in a one bed apartment. So my living room and my kitchen and my office are all one space. So I don't really want to be looking at anything dark and horrible, you know, in my day-to-day life. But also, I think when, you know, it takes at least a year to work on a book. And like, as I sit here, I have a deadline at like 5 p.m. on Friday. So I'm sort of in a space where I'm at the desk, you know, there's a risk of deep vein thrombosis. I'm there so much, like sort of 10 hours, 12 hours. And I don't want to be in a physically dark and oppressive space when I'm already in my head in that space and on the screen. I think there's a nice sort of like calming effect. I really like to have a calm, clean, organized space that looks pretty. The prettiness is the most important part.
And it does. And there's pink everywhere and flowers and beauty. And
it's
all
great for Instagram. Let's be real. It's great for the gram.
It is indeed. And tell me, you've just said now you like a clean, clear space, because every time I interview authors on their writing space, their writing room, most of them do say that even if it's cluttered, they know where everything is. Are you like that, or do you want the desk completely clear?
There's absolutely no clutter on my desk. I don't want to see it, because I am a ninja level procrastinator. So if there's anything that in any way is like, oh, I'll just, you know what I'll do? I won't write this book. I'll pull out that junk drawer and I'll go through everything. Like, no books would ever get written. So it's almost like a professional necessity that I'm clean and organized when I'm writing. Yeah, no distractions.
Now, my next question to authors is always, you know, your surroundings, your audio surroundings. So lots of writers like total silence, but I find a surprising number don't mind a lot of noise around them because they're in their head anyway. Where do you stand?
That's not me. So I'm in an apartment building and I had the most beautifully silent neighbours until about a year ago. Ooh. And now there is, I think, I haven't met them yet. I'm sure they're absolutely lovely, but I think they have a newborn baby. And weirdly, they also play a lot of kind of dance and techno music. So the beat comes through the wall. My dream is to be in like a shed out in the middle of nowhere, you know, but then I wouldn't want to be there at night because I'd be thinking serial killers are going to come and get me. So you have to find, I think in the last few months, I've had to find solutions because I'm really distracted by noise. I can't listen to music with lyrics because I start listening to them and get distracted. So what I have found are my beloved Apple AirPods have noise cancellation on them.
Oh, right.
And they are the best thing I ever spent. I have tried earplugs, I've tried other types of headphones, but they're just magic. You put them in and all the noise goes away. And then I start worrying that someone will knock at the door and I won't hear them.
Or break into your apartment and creep up behind you. That would happen in your book
I'm
with a character where...
I'm absolutely convinced someone will creep up behind me. So there's a balance of like, you know, do I really need the complete silence or do I want to be on edge for the next 2 hours?
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. Now, your novel 56 Days, which I know was a huge bestseller, was set during lockdown. So it wasn't just written during lockdown, it was set during lockdown. And I wondered for a long time whether there would be a genre of novels that actually used lockdown as the background to it. But in fact, most authors seem to have bypassed it completely and just, you know, not given the date and pretended everything was normal. It has been optioned, I believe, by, is it Netflix?
It's Amazon Prime Video.
Amazon Prime.
And it's made and all. It's in the can.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us about, like, is that a weird feeling for you? Are you precious about the adaptation or do you just take the check and run?
I take the check and run. I have absolutely, like, it doesn't bother me what they do with it. And I've had a number of novels optioned and that's always what I say. Because I love TV almost as much as I love books. And I don't know how to make it. These are the people who are doing this job for the decades usually. So the idea that I would say to them, I know what's, you know, the better thing to do here. I think that's crazy. So I hand it over and I trust them and I let them do whatever they like. But it is incredibly surreal. I got to visit the set in Montreal in July and it was so weird. It was like finding out that all my imaginary friends had come to life and were hanging out without me.
Wow.
And like I got to walk around Oliver's apartment. I kind of had an idea in my head that a set would be, you know, a couple of walls and they'd move them around, but they actually built his apartment for real. So you could walk around as if you were inside his apartment building and go from like his kitchen into his hall, into his bathroom.
Yeah.
It was the weird. It was honestly the weirdest thing, but in the best possible way. And you know, the show will be out early next year. It's going to be in 230 countries and territories when it comes out, which is insane. So I had a really good lockdown, and I still feel bad about that.
No, well, lots of people did, and you were productive during it, at least, and were able to use it to your advantage. Do you write anywhere else outside of your Barbie desk, your pink desk?
I do. So I frequently go, as much as I can, which is about twice a year at the moment, to Villefranche-sur-Mer, which is this little harbour village just outside of Nice in France, about 5 minutes away. And I absolutely love it there. And the reason I go is usually when I'm on a deadline or I'm trying to start something new, and I book a really like crappy little apartment with the most divine view. So that's how I can afford it. And just, you know, work with the laptop kind of in the afternoon, walk around in the morning, bit of rosé at night, and do that like every day for a couple of weeks. And what I love about it is that if I was at home doing that, people would be constantly interrupting me, inviting me places, you know, asking me to do things. Whereas when you're on holidays, quote unquote, people leave you alone. So I love doing that.
So you get your peace and quiet and you're not overly distracted.
To be honest, I've never been as productive in Villefranche as I have been at home. Go figure.
I wonder, is that the rosé or the view?
But I struggle on. I'm determined to make it work.
Very good. Now, the latest book, which I've got my hands on, is called Burn After Reading. How much do you want to tell us about it, Catherine?
I'll just give you the headlines, which is that it's about a man who most people suspect killed his wife about a year ago. He hires a ghostwriter because now he wants to tell his side of the story in a book. The ghostwriter has never ghostwritten anything before. She's a woman, so she's here locked in this house with this man who maybe killed someone, and she's hiding some secrets of her own. Dum, 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 etc, etc.
Bum, bum, bum. Okay, well, I can't wait to read it. When you're designing, I mean, given this is the home show, when you're designing interiors, and indeed characters, do you kind of have that in your head? Do you have a picture of it, or do you print out a picture of what you think it might look like? So, because it strikes me that you can forget where the dresser is, or forget that actually there's a door between here and there, or how many doors are off the hallway. And you could get yourself tied up in knots then at a later stage.
That's what copy editors are for.
Oh, right.
So they'll tell
not my
you,
job.
They'll tell you, she put down the glass that you said she put down 3 pages ago,
okay.
This kind of thing. But when it comes to interiors, like, I'm quite lazy. So I will choose really a place I know, a real place to me. So for instance, in 56 days, halfway through lockdown, I basically was going insane and I had to leave the little studio apartment I was in and move into the apartment I live in now. So in that book, Kira lives in the small apartment and Oliver lives in the apartment I moved into. So that's the level of laziness that's going on when I'm designing.
Inspired from real life. And are you somebody then that needs to have I imagine if I was writing a novel, I would need, especially one that takes a year, that you need either sticky notes or backstories or files on each person, on each character, to kind of say, so this is where they came from. This is what they would say in these circles. Like, how do you keep up with those characters?
I hold that in my head, really, but I do love an Excel spreadsheet. So the whole book is mapped out on my beloved word count spreadsheet. And it's mainly to sort of, you know, again, there's so much procrastination going on. If you saw the one I have now, it is, I'd say there's 5 different colours in it. It's formatted within an inch of its life. None of that is necessary, but, you know, it stopped me writing for an hour or so while I was playing with it. So that's how I keep track of the main points of the novel and like events and dates and timelines and things. But in terms of characters, that's really just something you hold in your head as you go along.
You strike me, Catherine, as somebody who gets great solace and comfort from order. And
yes.
Is that because your books, you know, are like, murder is chaotic and disordered. Do you think there's a link there?
Possibly. I'll ask my therapist. I definitely like things to be organized. It drives me absolutely insane when things are badly organized. So my family, like my parents and my brother, you know, when I go home, sometimes my sister is also involved, we'll need to go somewhere, right? So someone will need a lift here and then we'll need to get this thing from this place, but we'll have to be back to this other place at a different time. And I will have a plan and that plan will be perfect. It'll be fuel efficient. Everyone will get where they're going on time and that plan will be completely ignored for one that is pure chaos. And that drives me insane.
Okay, right. Well, listen, we can expect many more where burn after reading comes from because...
One more anyway.
you sound like you absolutely love it. And you have made such a fantastic job of this career, Catherine. And I'm a huge fan, as I said. So I'm absolutely can't wait to get this underway. And I won't turn off the lights afterwards, just in case. Catherine Ryan Howard, writer extraordinaire, thank you for telling us about your writing room.
Thank you so much.
At Mayo Clinic, we are conquering the unconquerable by leading the way in innovative regenerative medicines to help people with chronic medical conditions. Learn more at mayoclinic.org/possible. Mayo Clinic, you know where to go.
What makes a leader? It's a tough question, but this we know for sure. True leaders lead by example. They take risks and plunge into life with determination. And for real leaders, there's a symbol of high adrenaline and high achievement, the Range Rover Sport. The Range Rover Sport redefines sporting luxury with a dramatic modern design that meets a distinctive sporting character. And a well-appointed cabin brings a sense of occasion to every drive. The active noise cancellation feature filters out unwanted sound, making the cabin a cocoon-like sanctuary. Optional PM2.5 filtration reduces odors, bacteria, and allergens, while CO2 management enhances the wellness of everyone on board. Plus, you can curate the mood of every journey with configurable cabin lighting and bring a hint of refinement to every drive with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Build your Range Rover Sport at rangerover.com/us/sport. That's rangerover.com/us/sport.
Now, the Moore Street redevelopment has been given the green light, finally, by Dublin City Council in what will form part of a large 500 million, half a billion euros revamp of the area with a mixture of retail, office and residential units. The whole site is being redeveloped. But we wanted to find out what are the developers' plans, what amenities can we look forward to, what building is going to be undertaken. So joining me now to answer all of that is Olivia Kelly, Dublin editor with the Irish Times. Olivia, very welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much.
Now, you have been out and about looking at what is going on here. Tell us first, what area is being developed? Where are we looking at? Because it's big enough.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring you back a little bit in history, actually, to the sort of the late 60s and the early 70s. So if we think about this area, if you can envisage Moore Street in your head, parallel to O'Connell Street, but also parallel to the ILAC Centre. But before the ILAC Centre was built, there was a little warren of streets there to where the ILAC Centre is now. And they existed right up until the end of the 60s. And they were a warren of little traders' streets. So you'd have a lot of street traders, very small shops spilling out onto the streets there. Now, for the development of the ILAC Centre, they were all obliterated. And if anyone has ever wondered why the ILAC Centre is called the ILAC Centre, it's the Irish Life Assurance Company.
Yeah. I remember it when it opened and
great excitement.
We thought it was the most fabulous looking
with
space
the glass
age.
Lift.
Oh, it was nothing like it. And it just looks, anyway, decrepit now, but go on.
But so that's where we were. So that was to the west side of Moore Street. And to the east side of Moore Street, development didn't really happen. So, but if you can imagine, there was that little warren of streets as well. Mm. And a lot of them are still there. Now they're just back alleyways, really, to O'Connell Street and to Moore Street and to Henry Street on the other side, if you think of it as a block, and then Parnell Street on the north side. So basically, since the 80s, there's been tentative plans to do something possibly similar as the ILAC Centre with that warren of streets there. So there would have been a group there called the Carlton Group, and they started
after the cinema.
Exactly.
Okay,
so the Cards and Cinema people will still know on O'Connell Street, not operating now for a good long time, but the facade is still there. And then there's a vacant site beside the Carlton Cinema, vacant since the late 70s, since 1979.
It has. And like, there's whole chunks of that area which are derelict. They look awful, run down.
Indeed.
And I mean, I think
on our main street now, to have that vacant site there since 1979.
And you go down Las Ramblas in Barcelona, or, you know, even Oxford Street in London, and you're like, oh, why can't we do something like that? So what's happened? Who has bought it and what's envisaged?
Okay, so there was the Carlton Group, and they envisaged a centre pretty similar to the ILAC Centre. They didn't go ahead with that, and Dublin City Council CPO'd the land from them, then sold it to a developer people might know called Joe O'Reilly, whose company was Chartered Land. Then eventually that came into the ownership in 2016 of the current owners. They're a UK property group and they're called Hammerson. So instead of the big shopping centre development that would have been similar to the ILAC Centre, they decided it would be better to sort of preserve that little warren of streets, now not as they currently are or not as they were back in the 60s, but sort of to try and recreate that streetscape and keep it intact as much as they could.
Okay, so to integrate them into the overall, rather than kind of ploughing over them
so
and just building a block.
So not a big enclosed shopping centre, but a more open shopping centre, which we'd have seen more in recent times in other parts of the world. You know, that shopping centres, it's still a shopping centre, it still has all your high street brands, but it's more on a sort of street layout, little street layout sort of thing.
So like a village approach nearly.
That sort of thing, yeah. Now, not everyone says that they're doing that successfully. Mm. There are people who don't like these plans and who say it's obliterating what was historically there. You know, particularly people who are 1916 relatives groups and
because
preservation trusts.
A monument there.
Yes.
That they want preserved.
Indeed. And that is preserved. And that is no longer in Hammerson's ownership. It's now in the ownership of the state. And that's 14 to 17 Moore Street. And that is to become a commemorative centre. Now, the
news... Of the 1916 rising.
Exactly.
Because
the news isn't great there in that. That should have been there, but it was originally meant to be there for the centenary of the rising. And of course, we're that's long gone now.
Oh, right.
And so
But the only thing is now, once all this goes up, Olivia... Mm. Isn't it the case that the state will be kind of a bit embarrassed about this thing that hasn't been developed?
Well, I think a lot of the reason is that the other development around it, as in the private, the Hammerson site around it, hasn't been developed. And this is why the National Monument site, they're all sort of connected. But what the state is saying now is for the commemorative centre that they're hoping to start construction this year on that. It'll take a few years.
Right.
Just to bring you back then, you were sort of saying, well, here we go, we've got the permissions now. Hammerson did get, now, there's a few permissions. Site is split up into a few different permissions.
Yeah.
And they have three granted so far. But to temper the enthusiasm, that's now subject to judicial review.
Oh, here.
So they did get their planning permission.
It'll be the bicentennial before we see
possibly.
This.
So
okay,
in the courts
so
now on
there
that.
Are and who are the objections are coming from local traders and business people, or are they coming from state bodies?
The judicial review is the Moore Street Preservation Trust.
Okay.
Now that hasn't been heard yet in the courts. It was back in November they got permission. They got leave to take a judicial review,
as
the court said they could.
You have to look. I mean, I understand people want to preserve our history and our heritage, and so we should.
Yeah.
However, you know, if something is completely derelict, a bit like the Ivy Building and the other market up by Chiseborough. Like at some point you have to say enough is enough. This is now no longer our heritage being preserved. It's just a dump, and to move around it as best you can.
Yeah, and it's a dangerous and you know, very neglected part of the city. Those back streets off Henry Street. Like, I wouldn't walk down from Moore Street to Henry Street.
Not on
I'd
your
walk
Nelly.
On Moore Street, I'd walk in Henry Street, but not those back roads.
No. And I mean, I know that the Gardaí from time to time close them off, where I work, the Irish Independent up on Talbot Street there. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to close off alleyways and streets from time to time because of all the antisocial behaviour that's going on there. Mm-hmm. So anything, I think, that can do away with that or lessen it is probably a good thing. That said, it is always going to be controversial building in the heart of Dublin City with all that happened there. So, Olivia, are you going to stick your neck out with a date for any of this?
No. Definitely not. Oh, gosh, well, okay. If you think about it, so they have three permissions granted that are now under judicial review. They have another permission. So those three are on the Moore Street side, leading from Henry Street all the way up to Parnell Street. So in three different blocks.
It's massive. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, it's an almost 6 acre site, 5.6 acre site. So it's huge.
But there will be apartments in it and there will be shops and there will be
and
hotels.
And there'll be a metro station. So this is the other side of things. So there's a big on the O'Connell Street side. There's one that isn't through planning yet. Yeah. It's with An Bhfoirplán Óla now. Okay. Went to the city council, but was appealed and is with An Bhfoirplán Óla now. And that's where the metro stop will be. So, you know, okay. That's another big chunk of it that we're still waiting to see what will be the decision on that.
All right. Well, Olivia Kelly, Dublin editor with the Irish Times, you'll stay on top of that.
I'll do my
best. The next number of centuries or however long it takes. If you have an objection to this, folks out there, or if you wanted to go ahead, or what would you like to see there, do let us know, because we will be covering this, by the sounds of it, more than once on the Home Show, and we'll certainly take a trip down there if and when there's anything to see and have a look at what's there. But do get in touch with us at the Home Show at newstalk.com. Olivia, thanks a million for joining us. We're going to have a bit of fun now. We are always very global here on the Home Show, and we do like to bring you ideas and inspo from different cultures and countries around the world. So this week, I am delighted to have Home Show regular Natasha Rockadivine joining me with an insight into all the latest interior trends from around the world. You're off a plane. We've sent you everywhere, Natasha.
I wish. I would absolutely love that.
First
Anytime.
Class. You've been jetting around the place on behalf of the Home Show here on News Talk. Okay, but before I begin this, by the way, because there's a bit of, I know I'm going to get kind of envy vibe now. So I've looked at some of these pictures and I'm like,
I did pick great ones.
I'm such a fail. But before we start into all that, you have had your own interior trends showcased.
I have.
In your fabulous house.
I have. I actually, it's just launched in Life magazine and then in Ireland's Home Living and Interiors and Living. It feels strange. I'm not very cool. So, you know, being in the, like having my own project put out, to the world is, you know, it's different for me, but you know, I worked with so many amazing brands, so it was like, you know, such a collaborative effect.
It's the pictures are gorgeous.
Thank you.
And I know that you have a little girl.
I do, Freya. Yes.
Who looks very tidy.
Oh no, you know, I'm actually going to post a photo on Instagram in the next week or so of dad minding her for 10 minutes and the after effect, you know, so don't be fooled by the press photos.
Okay, I took an intake of breath when I saw the pale colours.
I know, because we just did that before. I know, do you know what? I have a rug, which obviously I can recycle, but you know, I just put it down and she's already drawing on things like that. But you know, I think because thankfully she's already going to her little spaces, so she's messing one area. So we have one area to like, she just completely destroys. But the rest, you know, hopefully she'll keep it clean. But, you know, like that's her job.
Right.
She's 3.5.
Okay.
She's nearly 4. And she's going to, and the more friends she brings over and cousins, it just goes messy. But I can close the door, Sinead. That's a dream. I can just close the door and she can just completely annihilate that room. And I can just sit there having wine or relaxing and ignore it.
What was your favourite room to do in the house?
I think the open plan room for living, because I've always lived in very small apartments and I've had wall beds and I've always shared rooms with people. So having the space to have an open plan, which is living, dining, kitchen and the little bar nook to bring my family and friends together. Mm. And then I think after that, Freya's, because like, you know, I've always wanted
you had great fun with it.
Yeah, really great fun. And I'm very creative. I never had. We moved a lot and I lived on my own since I've been about 14. So, you know, like, I just felt like it was kind of my inner child coming out in that room. And, you know, just making a space for, you know, a child is just always so fun.
You lived on your own since you were 14?
Yeah, well, my mom lived abroad and my parents were separated. So I did part-time boarding. Yeah, but I pretty much lived alone since 14. So, yeah, that's where the free spirit comes. The note-taking, the organisation.
Yeah. The organisation. You're always very well organised. The nerd, exactly. So one of the places I know you have lived in, so let's start with this
absolutely.
Place, is LA.
Yes.
It's an extraordinary place, and the light and the colour and the freeness of it and the ocean and all of that kind of creates a vibe that, and of course, California is rich and
people live there. There's two different styles, I feel like, in LA. There's like the boho chic, there's kind of the Cali cool, which is like what we see in movies, and it's like the linen curtains and like all the recycled or upcycled furniture, which, you know, can be patterned or just very vanilla. But there's places like the Mark Collective, which is our version of Max Salvage over in LA, where you can get like old furniture from movies. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's, I brought a vintage chest back there, I shipped it back, and basically it's just, it has kind of a Mediterranean feel, like, to compare it to Europe, you know, like a Spanish house, but a bit more vanilla. And it's just like eclectic mix of things. And you can make it very neutral, like Cali creams and, like, you know, more Spanish vibes.
The Meghan Markle look.
Yeah, exactly like that. Or you can make it kind of more, you know, bohemian and eclectic. And then you're moving into the more high end. But I think for this kind of point of this show, we're going for that kind of really fun mix of like creams and like just earthy tones. It's just very relaxing because the heat's there, so they can open the doors and have barbecues, and the outdoors indoors is so much a trend there.
You know, like, and in fact, you know, a lot of the, now I know that we're talking about the lovely nice houses over there, but a lot of them seem to make so much of that outdoor space that it is a whole other room.
Absolutely.
You know, that you can use pretty much all year round.
Yeah,
if you're in that sunshine.
Yeah, and I think it's such an important feature, and obviously we can take that back to Ireland in a very small way. And most people in Ireland, you know, like, live in apartments now or smaller gardens and things like that. And so, you know, like, it's just taking that kind of relaxed LA vibe. But as I said, it's really about mixing kind of character pieces, like from charity shops and sustainability, you know, sustainable pieces, and bringing that kind of, I suppose, just a relaxed, cool vibe, you know, just like that feeling.
So what would you do in an ordinary house, like in our houses, to bring that in? I'm just thinking it's such an oceanfront place.
Yeah.
Not all of it, of course, but I mean, the really nice places are. You know, is it that kind of blues and sand colours?
Yeah, I think, as I said, you can do kind of two different ways. I was going to say your outfit is very Cali cool.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's like the jeans and like the blazer. Yeah, like a complete, like that. So basically, I'm doing a show home in Auburn Woods in Malahide. So as an example, that for me is very, I feel like it's an earthy vibe. So I'm putting in lots of rattan kind of lamps and chairs, that kind of style. And then like cream
terracotta
couches, exactly, terracotta.
Okay.
But then
okay,
you can mix it up with colour. So it really depends on your style.
The big trend that I'm seeing in sofas at the moment is the boucle finish.
Amazing.
Look.
It's stunning, isn't it? Yeah,
well, I don't know if I like it or not. It seems as if, if people don't know what it is, it's like, it's gorgeous, soft fabric, usually in a neutral colour, but it looks as if it's like that bald jumper. It's kind of,
it's,
you
like
know,
sheep.
You have a jumper
like
for
a
ages.
Like a sheep.
It is.
It's like a sheep kind of fur.
It is comfy though.
It is comfy. And I think it's just, I think it's very nice for like hotels and if you have a big kind of loft house or, you know, an open plan kind of house.
It needs a big sofa.
Yeah, and kind of earthy, like, you know, like earthy fabrics around it. Like, it has to be in positioned in the right way, I think.
All right. Well, let's come back to Europe now. And we are going to what some people would consider the home of everything stylish, and that's Paris.
Yes, it is very stylish. It's absolutely amazing. See, I think Paris, and one thing I've noticed actually, like, kind of doing more research on trends around the world, because I didn't get to fly, maybe next year.
Oh yeah, I'll go with you.
Is that there's a sustainable kind of style throughout. So there's a lot of, like, in Paris, there'd be more flea markets. Mm. So bringing those flea markets, you know, into your home in terms of, like, you know, like an accent chair or a couch, but they do have the very chic style, and they're very much about bold colours, you know, like just one colour, like block kind of sleek couches and satins, and like putting a silk scarf on the couch, you know, just bringing in kind of just very, very sleek, you know, like the Parisian style, like, you know, it has to be luxury in the fabrics for Paris.
Yeah, I'd say even a flea market in Paris, somebody else's knockoff, is still stylish probably and still beautiful.
Totally. And they're all about layering. So like layering
okay,
it up and layering things like that with the fabrics and cushions and like putting in like tassels and like, you know, feather on the fabric.
Oh, that's like just a kind of maximalist style.
Yeah, mixing it. But I think I think French people dress like this. It's like they have the accents of that, but it's still very structured. You know, it's still very organised. Like they'd have a beautiful couch, a satin couch, which I actually have on one of the photos. And then the cushions would have kind of feathers or things like that. And then statement art, I think their art would be a little bit more racy over there, you know, so mixing that up. But I think for the most part, it's bringing that Parisian luxury and layers.
Opulence.
Opulence, 100%.
Coco Chanel, wasn't it? She who said, when you're leaving the house, stand in front of the mirror and take off one thing.
Makes sense, though. It is.
Because you tend to overdo it. Then just take off like a pin or a bracelet or a
dress
shoe.
On.
Except if you've got it, okay.
Keep the dress on.
Indeed. All right. Now, Japanese interiors, immediately you think of the very minimalist, you know, beige, white, Marie Kondo, everything kind of way. And in Tokyo in particular, like, you don't have a lot of space.
No, not
even
at all.
In really nice apartments, you know, you're up on the 40th floor and you've got what we would consider a shoebox.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the necessity of pulling back with those.
Well, it's Zen minimalism. So basically, like, as you said, it's about keeping that natural, innate kind of Tokyo vibes with all their finishes, like all the wood and the kind of bamboo style. But and they're also like, it's incredible about storage. I mean, if you look at anything online about, you know, like the unbelievable things, whether they're sustainable or not, like the way that they can move around rooms. And then the Schroeder house, I'm obsessed with that. It was kind of the first house that had movable walls. And I think Tokyo is like very much like embracing that. Like everything has three purposes. You know, like the bed can pull out and you see just all of the different options they have. Like they have kind of flats, like one single studio with the stairs up that has a bed on the top floor. And it's just unbelievable that their space planning is incredible.
And they're big for the kind of the screening off areas, but keeping the room very large.
Yeah. Space planning, using the natural kind of the natural fabrics and all. But I do think they have, like, they do have pops of colour, and they do, like, you know, when you think of like their art and their anime and all, like they do love pops of colour and neons and like fun, you know, gadgets as well. And they're very obviously high tech as well. So I think it's just a mixture of that. But I always find, no matter what you like, what you see with Tokyo trends, it's very minimalist. Like it's still very relaxed, you know, that way. Unless, you know, some people have Hello Kitty everywhere. But like for the most part, I think they're incredible with storage. They have everything. Just there's a purpose for everything, if not five purposes. So it's just really interesting. And also, like, they love clean lines. Everything has a structure to it. So, you know, it's very interesting to look, especially if you do have a studio flat, you know, for their actual, the way that they lay out the rooms.
Yeah. And I suppose then when you have a culture like that and, you know, it's such a kind of a dense living environment, you get designers who step up to the plate because
Absolutely.
Needs must.
Yes.
So they're different from designers in other places where you've all the space in the world and you can do what you
Absolutely.
Like. You know, they have to create.
Like modular and multi-purpose furniture. Yeah, it's all about that there.
So
yeah,
it's a great aesthetic to kind of look at.
It is. It's for your own home.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and as you say, especially for, you know, the smaller and ever smaller apartments that have been built nowadays that have to be functional and, you know, yet have everything that you
And also people sharing rooms and things like that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Tokyo. And again, they like, so you kind of, I know your colour pops and they love that, but actually the base would be probably a kind of a pale wood.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I would always see wood and
something.
Then modular. And then if you move more high end, obviously it's similar to like everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
It's modular. It's very, you know, luxurious. Okay. But for the most part, I would say I'd always see wood or earthy styles.
And I suppose then that's not a world away from our next place we're going to visit, which is Copenhagen. So we've had Hygge.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I always say that wrong.
And now we've Hygge 2.0.
I
Talk
know.
To me about that.
We're moving forward. It's just like everything's evolving. And I think it's kind of bringing the Scandi style in. For me, I think I feel like there is an overlap when I was researching this. And obviously, I love trends. And Copenhagen and Tokyo have similar kind of styles with the modular furniture, you know, the kind of earthy style.
No bling bling.
No bling bling at all. You know, and also they love similar again. That's what I said. The common thread with all of these cities is that the bringing in the vintage, you know, bringing in like what upcycling and each place, whether they call it a flea market or a salvage market, it's the same style, bringing things, mixing and matching. And I think they love chunky things like knits. I think the weather is different, like chunky fabrics, chunky throws, like bringing that in, which you wouldn't see obviously in Tokyo as much. So there's definitely, I think it's just an advancement on the Hygge. I say it wrong.
Is it? Well, you should.
No. Do you know, I always say it wrong. I have my own language.
We know what it means. It's like a hug.
Yeah, a hug.
Isn't
exactly.
All right.
Yeah, but it's all about being centered and, you know, and the same again, as you move more higher end, it's going to move into more luxurious fabrics. But it's a very earthy, purposeful kind of design.
Now, what's happening in London at the moment? Vibrant, busy, on the go, 24-hour city.
I think it's like, I always associate London with wallpaper. That's probably why I love it, because I studied there. I think cottagecore, like bringing in the kind of cottage feel.
Liberty.
Liberty. And then just like the Royal Palace, you know, like I always just think that like wallpapers, everything has curtains. Like when you have a wardrobe, it has curtains in it, you know, like it has, you know, the curtains on the bunk beds, which I put the photos, which I'll share on Instagram. I think it's very much about kind of a very sleek, expensive kind of version of, you know, the Royal House. Like, you know, just, I suppose, a coffee shop you'd imagine in Ireland with quaint chairs, wallpapers. But I do think there's a mix of that with very simple lines, you know, bringing in layers of luxury, because obviously it's moving forward and things like that. But I do always, like, I'm always such an admirer of London trends, because I do think it's absolutely beautiful.
And it works so well with that, with kind of heavy velvet drapes or the dark wood furniture.
Like
when you've got the windows. That, and of course, you know, a lot of London is so old you don't want to lose the impact of those interior features, like you know, the cornices and the ceiling roses,
and the lighting is incredible, the chandeliers and things like that.
So that whole vibe goes with it. There's a gorgeous picture that you've accompanied with this, and you'll put it up on your Instagram, Natasha Rockerdivine, which is a bedroom, a child's bedroom, and it looks like railway sleepers,
doesn't it? It's
but
fabulous,
gorgeous.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It has that kind of sentimental London history, you know, in it, like the fact that they do look like railway sleepers, but so opulent and probably quite expensive to make that. But you know, at the same time, with everyone now learning DIY, you could probably buy a bed, you know, in IKEA or wherever, and you know, spray
it's like an MDF cover over two bunk beds,
exactly,
so
and then create curtains and stuff like that, which is beautiful.
And use some great tips here about how to get that vintage look just at home for next to nothing.
Absolutely. I think for me, going from the vintage look, you can use tea tins and planters or pencil holders for that. I think it looks absolutely amazing. And I also think, like, back to what I've always said, is going to like your local markets, your local charity shops, your local salvage squad, salvage markets like the Max Salvage here, and just really like bringing in any of the trends, you could bring that in, whether it's just looking at the furniture and also the space that you're going with. If you're living in a Georgian house, you're going to go for more chunky furniture, more vast pieces. If you're living in kind of a small flat like the Tokyo trends, you want to bring in like accent pieces like coffee tables. But you know, you can upcycle any of these things and bring any of these trends to life. So, you know, it's just really exciting to see them.
Right. Well, then finally, we have to come home. Yeah. Is there a Dublin trend? What is it? And what does it look like?
I think there's a storytelling trend. I love that. I was looking that up and I love that kind of idea. I think all of the Irish homes, no matter if it's really modern or if it's like really old fashioned, I think we all have a story in our home. And I absolutely love that idea. So everyone is, I think since COVID, everyone's looking at it in such a purposeful way. So whether it's bringing in like things from like vintage shops or your granny's, like I have my granny's jewellery box that she got with candles that she got for her wedding present. So bringing in kind of storytelling trends, whether it's prints or art or bringing in artists that you like, or whether it's from your own family or locally, I think that's such a huge trend. And then I think rich colours, like bringing in kind of deep greens and blues and navies. I think we all love in Ireland very strong colours.
Yeah, we're not afraid of them anymore.
No.
There was a time, I think like 80s, 90s, that awful time in architecture where everybody had brown furniture, you know, flowery wallpaper and everything clashing.
That's what I'm saying.
But in a range of browns and oranges.
Exactly. And then also, then it went very vanilla for a while, which grey kitchens and stuff, which are beautiful. And I still like them. You know, they still look lovely. But I think it's just bringing that storytelling into the home, whether it's through your accessories, your art, or it's your own family or through other, you know, artists and art. I think people are more sentimental about their interiors.
Yeah, that's
here.
A good way of putting it.
Yeah,
okay. And it's nice to have some heirlooms and display them,
absolutely,
you know, in it, that people love that.
And that's
where
so
did that come
now
from, and who had it, and that's very interesting. And having those talking points.
Yeah, exactly.
We're great at conversation. You know?
We are.
Brilliant. Okay, well, Natasha, that is a wealth of travel that you have undertaken for us, and all those different trends. It's fascinating to see, you know, the part that culture plays and history plays in so many countries,
absolutely,
and how that comes out.
And space,
in
you know, like Tokyo, for example, they don't have the opportunity for like Georgian houses and things like that. So it does affect the scale, the style. And then, so when you have a smaller space, I always feel that they have to make the most of the pieces.
Mm.
You know that? So if you kind of bring that into your design in any type of house, it makes you think through everything in with more consideration. So
brilliant. All right. Well, you can check out all of those trends and photographs and all the different country styles. You can let us know which one is your favourite at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and Natasha will pop that up on her Instagram, and you'll find that Natasha Rocca Divine. And that's all we have time for this latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I've enjoyed your company. I hope you've enjoyed the items we've had on this time. If there's anything you missed or you'd like to listen back to other pods, well, they're all up on newstalk.com, on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoon was on sound. Stay tuned next week for our next episode. And in the meantime, of course, you can check back any other eps you have missed. It's been lovely having your company this week, and I look forward to having you listen next time.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan, Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.